Welcome to today's episode of The Young and the Wellness, Raising Brazilian Kids, Fostering Healthy Choices in Children. Trigger warning for today's episode, we will talk about addiction, drug, and alcohol use.
Well, I am so excited to be here today. I'm here with Michaela, and thank you for taking your time to talk with us. I'm so excited for our conversation today. Can you briefly share your name, pronouns, and how you support the district related to wellness?
Yeah, so my name is Michaela Brockhoff. I go by she, her, and I am a mental health advocate for the Centaurus High School.
Woo-hoo! So, yes. Can you give our listeners just a little brief overview of like what the mental health advocate role is?
Yeah, so my role is that I run the wellness room. It's a tier one mental health intervention. So any student can utilize it. I offer like calming strategies, fidgeting strategies. We briefly talk about what might be stressful. And then if a student needs like more support, I go to my other mental health advocate and she's really awesome. She does wonderful work. And so then she'll meet with them regarding what they need. And if she can meet with them weekly, she does that. If she can't, we refer out to other therapists that can help students just get back on track.
That's an amazing service. It sounds like such a well-oiled machine to make sure our kids have what they need when they're in school. Real quick, before we get into the juicy stuff, you talked about the wellness centers being a tier one. Can you briefly describe what tier one means for our listeners?
Yeah, so tier one, we look at it like a pyramid. It would be the bottom of the pyramid. And tier one is everybody, anybody and everybody. That includes special ed, that includes our 504 students, it includes everybody. So tier one is, it's available for all students, anywhere they come from, and anyone can use it. So it's a wonderful thing. I think it's a great way to like catch the students that we normally wouldn't, that kind of fly under the radar. And this is where they come. And then I'm like, wow, like I never thought you were struggling. Like you just don't like outwardly say it. So this is a good space just for them to outwardly express themselves in a calming environment.
100%. I mean, to be able to have this available for all students is so critical. So thank you for just briefly explaining that a little bit. Let's go ahead and get into it. So when we talk about substance use, drinking, smoking, celebrating with substances, I think sometimes when we think about these things, what often comes into mind is like maybe older students or older youth or young adults. I'm thinking even probably all the way up to like college age, but I know for this episode, we wanted to talk a little bit more about littles and how important it is to start talking with younger children about substances. Well, first of all, like what age should we start talking about these kinds of things?
Yeah, so I have experience with talking about like substance use. And when I would talk to littles, I would say like unhealthy choices or healthy choices. And so I would do it honestly down to like 4 years old. That's when where I've worked, the kids are starting to come to school. And it was a very, it was a way to where we could start having conversations in a obviously developmental stage. So we wouldn't be talking about hard drug use with four-year-olds. We would be talking about like risky behaviors and, oh, hey, this looks a little unsafe. So what should we do? Those types of things. And then I would every year talk to students all the way up to like sixth grade. And sixth grade is when we would really get into like the meat of it. Like this is like, these are the drugs that we're seeing. This is alcohol. This is all this kind of stuff. And the kids really like it when we have open communication. And the younger you start it, the more they're like, oh, yeah, that's super unhealthy. Oh, I know about this. That's an unhealthy choice versus healthy choice. So it was kind of like we're building up to have those harder conversations, but helping students and kids understand like, hey, if it looks unsafe or makes you feel like icky inside, that's what I would describe it as. Like, does it give you a tummy ache? Does it make you feel icky? then we should, like, we need to go get an adult, and just having them aware of like all the safe people in their life. But the more you talk about it, it kind of like takes away the taboo of drugs and alcohol. Like, oh, we don't touch it. It's like bad and all this stuff. And it's like, they're going to be exposed to it at some point in their life. So getting them ready to like take it on in a healthy mindset is like my go-to. And I think it just, it creates a safe place for them to express themselves.
Totally. I mean, I honestly couldn't have said it better. Like, we want to start young. We want to just take all the taboo out of it. Obviously, at developmentally appropriate ages, having these conversations. I love everything you said. I'm also wondering, you know, our students, especially even littles, are just exposed with so much technology. What kind of effects do you think that has on this, like our littles and talking about substances?
Yeah, I think they just are more exposed to it. Like thinking about when I was in elementary school, and I mean, I'm only the ripe old age of almost 31, but just knowing like what I was exposed to pre-social media compared to what like these students come into me with. And I'm like, wow, like these things that they're exposed to are coming younger and younger. And I have fourth graders who would come to me and be like, this is like what they're doing. I'm like, wow, that's like a drug. That's alcohol. These are unhealthy things that are happening. And they're just like, oh, it looks cool though. And just explaining to them, yeah, it looks cool. However, is it healthy? So yeah, I mean, they're just getting exposed to it lower and lower. And I've had experience where students were using substances at fourth grade, which was really, I was like, wow, like when I was growing up, it was like high school, maybe eighth grade, if I can remember correctly. But yeah, it was fourth grade, and that was surprising to me. So then I was like, wow, we really need to have these conversations younger and younger, just because what they are exposed to.
100%. And you know, for the BBSD curriculum, we start talking about substances and just like in a general way, like household items and poisons and just dangerous things. You know, you got to start developmentally appropriate, of course, but we really start these conversations in BBSD in first grade. We give them kindergarten to get settled in, you know, and start learning how school works and get into their routines. And then first grade, I mean, this is just, like you said, younger and younger is where they're exposed. So we just have to start those conversations when they're little. It feels like when they're so little, but they're ready. You know, they need to have these conversations.
Yeah. Well, and like substances looks like candy. Like they look like gummy bears. They look like Pop Rocks. And so telling, and what kindergartner who's like, oh yeah, I don't want gummy bears. Like they love gummy bears. They love that stuff. So it's like, don't take it from strangers. Like, don't pick it up off the side of the road. Like, there are things where it's like, that's an unhealthy thing. And eventually they'll understand what it is, but they won't at that age of like, but it looks like a gummy bear. 100%. So just having it, like those conversations, like, ooh.
It's 100%. And I mean, and honestly, like it's in people's homes now, and it does look like candy. So just having that awareness of like, maybe talking to an adult or just making sure before you put something into your body that it's okay to put in your body. I know one time I was working with a student and they had an allergy. I can't remember what the allergy was specifically. And I offered them like a piece of candy or something. And they were like, I have to go tell my mom. I don't know if I can have this. And I was like, what? It's just candy. And then it made me realize the student had an allergy and just wanted to be sure what was going in their body. And that was just such an eye-opening experience for me, but so great that students were already taking control of their health. So,
yeah. And kids are great with that. Like, they know, like they would even tell me, they're like, Miss B, like that was an unhealthy choice. Or I call them red or green flags. I'm like, that was a red flag. I'm like, you're right. And this was like 4K. And I was like, they comprehend it when we break it down and just start young.
Totally. I know you work there at the high school. And so I'm wondering if the high schoolers have any opinions on when they first saw their peers maybe starting to engage with substances. And I don't know. I always just love hearing from the students. Do you have anything that you'd like to share on that?
I do. I actually told a bunch of my high schoolers that come in here, I was like, hey, I'm doing this podcast. I'm like, that's so awesome. Do you want our input? And I was like, yes, that would be awesome, because they're the ones living in it. They're the ones dealing with it every day. So I did ask a couple of my high schoolers. I was like, hey, when did you like start noticing about like having peers do drugs or do substances? And like the youngest was about fifth grade. They said fifth or sixth grade is when they started like seeing their peers doing it and kind of knowing more and more about it, but not they're learning it like through social media or on like the streets. Like they're not learning about it in like an educational area. And so I asked them, I was like, hey, what would you want? Like, what did you wish you knew about drugs as like a high school student? And they were like, we wish that it wasn't like glorified. I feel like social media does glorify it. They're like, oh, it's so great. It's so awesome. And it's like, you know, when you're of age and you want to like experience that, how can you do it in a healthy way? However, like your brains are still developing. Like it's not fun. You can do permanent damage. It doesn't make you look cool doing it. I think a huge thing, especially where I was last year, was vaping. I know it's very different in this state. I was in Wisconsin, but vaping was like a huge thing. Everybody did it. And we were like, oh, vaping's like really bad for you, but it was like glorified. It was kind of like the cigarettes of my age of like everybody smoked and everybody like smoked blunts. And it was so cool. And it's like, it's not that cool. So they just really want to know, be like, it looks cool for like 5 minutes and then it's not cool anymore. And then they also wanted to know, like, drugs now are so easily laced. I know currently where I'm at right now at Centaurus and just our community, like laced weed with fentanyl is a huge thing right now. And you don't know it's laced unless you test it. So kids are smoking weed, hoping to get high, and then they have a fentanyl reaction. And fentanyl is very deadly. It's not something that is easily boom reversed. It's a lot. So just knowing that like drugs are easily laced, like be careful what you're doing and who you're getting it from and all that stuff. And then just they wanted to know more about alcohol. Like when we talk to kids about drugs, it's always drugs, don't do drugs. And it's not really talked about like alcohol, where now it's like they're like, we want to learn more about what alcohol does to us. And then also talk about other things that are addictive besides drugs, like technology is addictive, sugar is addictive, caffeine is addictive, social media is addictive. So all these other things that are also addictive, and learning like, okay, social media, everybody has social, well, most people have social media, but like, okay, what's a limit that I should set for my brain development? Because they have come out with, okay, 2 hours a day for teens should be social media, and even less. So it's like knowing your limit and why. And then one of the things that my students shared with me that I thought was really like eye-opening was that not everybody who does drugs look like zombies. Like they don't look like they're on drugs. Like some of them look happy and energized and they're like, yeah. And so just knowing that too, of like, kind of breaking out the stereotype of what a drug person looks like. But yeah, so.
Lots of good stuff. Our students are so insightful, and you know, they're closer to the ground than we are on a lot of things. So I just love hearing about their experiences, but I think that's all valid, extremely valid information. And a little bit of a nod to our high THC and fentanyl episodes and vaping episodes that we had. If you haven't heard those already, go ahead and check those out. We talk a little bit more in depth about all of those. So I'm curious. Okay, so kind of like going back to the littles when we were chatting earlier, I'm wondering if you have any examples or stories of young people, like littles, and how they could be picking up on our behaviors, either from adults around them or even older siblings.
Before this year, most of my work has been with littles. So I have funny stories and I have like really sad stories. I'll share my funny story. I was at an elementary school in Wisconsin And I had a student who was like very adamant about sharing what their mom drank. And, you know, we're just like, you know, your mom can drink alcohol. You know, she does it in a healthy way. This little girl went out of her way and she took empty wine bottles and brought them to school and was like, look, Miss V, this is what my mom drinks. Of course, we had to call home. The mom was mortified. And she's like, yeah, I had like a wine night with my friends. And I was like, totally understandable. It was in a healthy way. Like, it was all very healthy, but it was just like, kids really like, look at, like, this is what my mom's doing. And they want to share things and they do pick it up because they are just such sponges. So they know, like, oh, my mom and dad act kind of silly this weekend. Like, they get all that. And you don't, like, they'll share it with anybody and everybody who will listen to them. Yeah. And then one of my like sadder stories was I had a student also back in Wisconsin. They're in third grade. And they brought in their art supplies. And the art supplies had like meth needles in them. And so having to like discuss with a third grader, and she knew what her mom was doing. It was really, really sad because I did have to, you know, make a report and CPS got involved and police got involved, and just having to educate this nine-year-old on, hey, mommy was making unhealthy choices. And I did that through like books and art therapy and play therapy. And it took a very long time, because, you know, their brains are not developed to understand what exactly it was, but they knew it was bad. So yeah, I mean, kids pick up on so much. And I think sometimes as adults, we forget that. We forget that kids are watching our every move and picking up everything. And so just being aware of like, oh, like they saw this, they could pick it up. And like having those conversations of like what a healthy choice is versus unhealthy, and explaining to them, like, as an adult, like drinking a beverage is okay sometimes, but like as a kid, let's not do that because that's unhealthy.
Totally. I mean, this is not to be shaming, because I think the thing that we have to remind ourselves and that we do tell young students is, you know, our brains are at different points of development. And so when adults are doing it, their brain is developed and it affects us differently, which is why every once in a while a drink is okay. If that's what somebody chooses to use. And for people, you know, even, I mean, they're already saying like up to like 25, 26 years old, even like younger, your brain is still developing. So just anything that you're putting into your body at this point is going to be affecting your brain and your body and its development. So I think that's a distinction we make all the time, is why there's these differences, because we don't want to shame anybody, because, you know, drinking is legal. And I mean, we do have glasses of wine or something every now and then. That's part of our culture. But like, why is this important for our young people to know what harms are associated with that for them?
Yeah.
I think another funny story was, I was talking with a coworker and they were like, you know, their little was walking around with a coffee mug and she was joking like, oh, is that your coffee? Ha ha ha. And they were like, no, it's my beer. With a straight face, was just like, no, it's my beer. And then at that moment, my coworker was like, oh, they really are picking up on everything. Okay, maybe we like scale back on how much we're drinking or how much we're doing it around them, just so that way they know that there's other ways that we like deal with stress and deal with other things, right? Like exercising, healthy activities, going outside, hanging out with friends, all the things we know we do, but we just don't want it to be overshadowed by substances, because that's what the kids are picking up on.
Oh yeah. And I have nieces, and every time I would drink wine in front of them, I called it like adult juice, because they were like, I want some. And I was like, no, you can't. You have to wait till you're an adult. And now that they're older, they're like, oh, like KK is going to go drink wine. I'm like, yep, but you can't because you're not old enough, but I can. And I also like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have like a glass, and just showing them like moderation and healthy ways of doing it, because they are 7 and they are picking up on it. But just knowing that, like, modeling that too, kids will see that too, and it'll they'll bring that into their adult life, being like, okay, I know how to do this in a healthy way because I saw my adults in my life doing it in a healthy way. So yeah, yeah.
100%. I think what I'm getting a lot from our conversation already is like, it's a lot about harm reduction because, you know, alcohol is part of our culture in a lot of different ways. And so it's just not always realistic to say we're not going to do it, period. But there's ways to do it in a healthy way and to explain what those differences are, which kind of leads me to my next question, which is for adults who are around little people, specifically maybe like elementary age, if you start seeing kids like picking up on these things or saying things related to substances or alcohol, like, I mean, as a parent, as an adult, like, how do we approach that? Is it best to like approach it in the moment? Like, what do we say? Is it better? Sometimes in the moment is not the right time. Do we have a conversation later? I don't know. Like, how do we deal with that?
Yeah, I always love to like, I always preach open conversations. Kids are going to ask questions. And sometimes as adults, we're either uncomfortable or we don't have the answer. And telling our students and our kids, like, I don't know, like, let me figure that out. Or, yeah, like, let's chat about it, obviously in a developmentally appropriate way. But, yeah, they just talking about it in the moment and just having the open conversation and creating a safe place and a safe space to have, like, real conversations. Like, hey, like, this, you know, that person is doing an unhealthy thing. Like if you see somebody on drugs or, you know, see somebody who is inebriated, like, hey, they're doing it in an unhealthy way. Like, let's chat about like, okay, some adults make that decision. Some teens make that decision. Like, what can you do if you're ever in that situation when you get older? Who can you go to? And the more we talk about it, like the more often our teens are like when they start doing that stuff or if they are exposed to it, like they're going to come to us because as younger, like they remember, oh, we talked about it when I was like in fifth grade, sixth grade. And so I was prepared for it. I was comfortable talking to my adult about it. So now that I'm exposed to it, I can ask them more questions. I always avoid like why questions. Why questions put anybody, even littles, into like defense mode. Like, oh, I'm in trouble because they're asking me why. And we really want to take away the you're in trouble part about talking about it. And then just reiterating healthy choices versus unhealthy choices. Who can you go to if something is going on that's making you feel unsafe? What adult can you go to? Because the more we talk about it, the more we take away that taboo again. And the more it's just open and out there.
Is there any like good non-confrontational language people can use to like kind of start those conversations?
Yeah. So I always like to use like, help me understand, or like, what about this is challenging for you? Or what about this situation makes you feel unsafe? So really taking about like the why, because as adults, sometimes we just jump to it. Like, oh my gosh, like this kid is coming in. Like, you know, what is alcohol? Like, why are you asking that? Like, and so instead of like, if a child comes to us, like, what is alcohol? Be like, oh, like, what made you ask me that question? Like, where did you see alcohol? And just also asking like, what does alcohol mean to you? Cause kids might have a totally different idea of what alcohol is. So just trying to see where their brain is at before we educate them. But yeah, just asking non-confrontational questions, but being open and then setting limits. So if you do have, you know, I know we're talking about littles, but if you do have a teen who is like doing substances and you're like, ooh, what is making you do that? And they're just like, I don't want to have that conversation. Adding a timeline based on like your needs and their needs. So I always like give options. It helps the teen and the child, even children, like, okay, you can do this or that, or hey, we can have this conversation today or tomorrow or Friday or Saturday. So they feel like I have a say in it. We're still having the conversation, but I have a say in when the conversation is going to be had. It can help them feel empowered to talk more, and just gives them like, okay, like they do care about it. And they do want to have the conversation with me. So yeah.
Love that. Love that. Speaking of, I mean, kind of the next phase of these conversations, how can parents like help young people who may or suspect be using substances? And this can apply, I believe, for a lot of ages, like many ages. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. So I am all about boundaries and natural consequences. Every action we have has a consequence, whether it's positive or negative. And so telling our kids, like, if you do this, this could happen. And that, I mean, I would have conversations as young as like 4. And it was like, you know, we like unhealthy touches, like, oh, I punched somebody. Okay, what's your consequence for punching somebody at like school? Like, it's not a punishment, it's a consequence. So like, oh, you talk to the principal, or we have to call home, or you have to, like, these are all things. And so then moving into like, what is a consequence of doing drugs? What is a consequence of drinking alcohol? And then also putting in like the consequence of drinking and doing drugs at a young age versus at the age that it's developmentally appropriate to do it. So having those and just always setting clear boundaries, I would always tell my parents when they were like, please help me with this. And I was like, okay, this is a boundary that we're going to set. And it's like, hey, if your child does this, like, this is your consequence. And just following through. And I would always say, like, it's going to hurt you more than it hurts the kid. Like, it's painful as an adult to put a boundary on a child, because we see them like struggling with it, but then it gets easier. And I've worked with many parents who are like, yeah, that first one, like, I cried because I had to like take something away, or I had to like show them what the consequence was. And then it's like, but wow, like, they never did it again. Or they were like, okay, like, I know what to do now. So just, yeah, I would explain that, like, it hurts adults sometimes more when we implement boundaries and consequences. But it helps a child become a healthier human being, and it helps a child become ready for the real world.
100%. Oh my gosh. I was just about to say that, like, consequences, natural consequences, boundaries, all these things, like, never cease to exist.
Yes.
In life, right? Like, so this is the time when there are young people to really start learning that in a safe and healthy environment. Before maybe they get into the real world later, and there could be some really harsh consequences. And so this is the time for them to learn that. And if they don't have that, then I've actually heard from young people a lot, like, they really appreciate when adults in their life have like been open and caring and warm and loving, but also had clear boundaries, also had clear expectations, also was able to provide structure, because that's what they need to be able to thrive.
Yes. And they like, kids thrive with boundaries. They thrive with structure. And I've said this a couple times, and people will be like, what? No. Like, and it's like, yes, they do, because kids really want to know what they can push. What part can they put? Like, how far can I take this? And if you're like, nope, like, you can't take it that far. Like, no, that's not okay.
Yeah.
But then they don't have like the whiplash effect of when they go out into the real world and they do something and they get in this huge trouble and they're like, wait a minute. Like, and then they have this big emotional reaction because they've never dealt with their emotions earlier in life. So just providing that area and that space for them to process it, to give them tools, to do all these things, so that way when they're adults and they're out there in the real world, that they're like, oh yeah, like, I remember when I got in trouble for this because that was my consequence. Now as an adult, like, ooh, okay, I know how to regulate my emotions so they don't blow up.
Exactly. I mean, who doesn't love the feeling of like knowing what you needed to accomplish, and then kind of like looking at it from another angle, and then you accomplished it, because that's also a boundary, right? Like getting a deadline, like meeting something by a deadline, getting an essay done by a deadline. Those are all boundaries. And when you like get it in and then you get a good grade, like, that's a natural consequence. And I think sometimes we always think of consequences, like you said, as negative, but they're also positive. And so who doesn't love that when you are able to like achieve something in a positive way? So yes, that is the ultimate way for our kids to yes, that's, I mean, that's school.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And yeah, positive consequences. I love when it happens, when a student is like, I did all these things and then I got an A, or I did all these things and I got this reward. And I'm like, yeah, because that's your consequence, like your positive consequence for being a positive person, for doing all the things. So yeah.
Intrinsic rewards.
Yes. It's wonderful.
Awesome. Okay, so moving on. I know we all are like not perfect. We definitely all experience stress to some degree at some point. What is the best ways we can be modeling healthy coping strategies for our littles?
Yeah, so I am always like, please model for your kids. I've worked with kids for 6-7 years now. I don't have any kids of my own. However, I do have nieces and nephews, and they just like soak up everything. And so showing them like, okay, this is what it looks like to be stressed. And now this is what it looks like to take care of my stress. I've snapped on my nieces, and I'm sure people have snapped on their kids, because it's a stressful world we live in. And just acknowledging it, being like, oh, hey, like, I'm sorry, I snapped. This is what's going on. Doesn't excuse my behavior of snapping at you. However, I'm stressed. I'm going to go take a beat. And I actually did this one time with my nieces. I had to go babysit because of something, and I was very stressed out. Being a school counselor was very stressful. And I came and I was already like, oh, today was a terrible day. I had to deal with them. And at the time they were like 3 and 4 and, just rambunctious. They're twins. So they were rambunctious. And I was like, I walked in and they were just like, KK, like, come play. And I was like, you know, KK's had a really hard day. Like, she needs to relax. And like, then they got me snacks and they brushed my hair. And so they were like, really like, oh my gosh, we have to take care of her. And so they knew what I needed. And kids really pick up on that, especially if you model like, oh, cause then when they get stressed, they can be like, I need to go like in my room and take a break, or I need like a snack or somebody to brush my hair. So it just gives them the opportunity to, wow, okay, that's what stress looks like. That's how my adult dealt with it. So now when I approach stress, that's how I'm going to deal with it. It's just, we all make mistakes. And as adults, it's great to show kids and admit when we make mistakes. And just show them like, yeah, that's what it looks like to also own our behavior.
Love that. Oh, that like made me, what you can't see is I was like all warm and fuzzy, and I just love that because our littles do pick up on so much, and it's so cute when they want to take care of us because they want everyone to be like happy all the time. They're so cute.
Yes. They're just, oh, like I miss littles. Like when I worked in elementary, I like hurt my thumb and stuff, and I came back with a cast, and all the kids are like, Miss B, like, what do you need? And I'm like, these are like 4-year-olds. They're like, do you need a hug to feel better? I'm like, yes, you know? So they know what we need. It's just sometimes they don't read our body language. So we have to tell them like, I'm feeling this way, and just give them a word for the emotion. So,
and sometimes to let them know it's like not their fault, like why something might be happening with us.
Yes.
That's a big piece, but that could be like a whole nother episode.
Yeah, it could be.
Oh, it could be like a whole series. Do you have any, we've had a great conversation today, Michaela. Like, you've dropped a lot of nuggets of wisdom and gems. I'm so appreciative for this conversation. I'm wondering if you have any resources for people to take away with if they wanted to like dig into this a little bit more.
Yeah. With working with kids, I've noticed that like book reading has been really awesome. Like, I used to go into classrooms and be like, hey, like, this is what we're going to read about. And then, you know, we'd talk about it after. And so Julia Cook, she is one like my go-to person when I'm talking about big emotions or big things that happen in our lives. Because sometimes when we take on big things and we have little bodies, we don't know what to do with it. So just normalizing also like other stuff. So Julia Cook has a lot of books. You can find it on her website. She's actually spoke at a couple of conferences that I've gone at. Really great about talking about consequences with kids and like what that looks like. And she has a lot of books about like My Mouth is a Volcano. So it's like a person who, you know, just talks all the time or uses inappropriate language. So it's like consequences to our mouth being a volcano. all that kind of stuff. And it helps them be engaged, and they're really fun books. Like, they're not like these, now we're going to talk about emotion, like very dry books, like very great books. There's also another one that I love. It's called Don't Be Scared, Be Prepared. And it kind of goes into like school safety, and it's like ants, and like kids love it. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be scared. I'm going to be prepared. So when I've had a lot of teachers and parents come to me, like, how do we talk about safety with our kids? Like, it's hard to like this day and age to talk about all the terrible stuff that goes on in our society. And I'm like, oh, I got you. Like, this is a great book, and the kids love it. So there's just a lot of really good books out there, and kids love. I don't know if I've ever met a kid who was like, no, I don't want to read that. Like, they're just like, yeah, like, let's read it. You got to make it fun. And yeah. So if you're needing anything, like, she has great books. There's also other good books out there too. So.
Oh, those are some great ones. Julia Cook. Can you tell me, is that more like parent facing, like, kind of information, or is that like young people facing, like, something maybe to read aloud with your young people?
So she's wonderful. She actually has two. So she'll come out with a book that you read with students. I've read them all the way down to like 4K, which is pre-kindergarten. It's 4-year-olds. I've read her books, and like, they are like, yeah, like, it's colorful, it's great. And then she also comes out with like a parent or like teacher guide of like, okay, so these are questions to ask your students or ask your kid after reading the book. So they are elementary focused. I would not read these with high school students. They might think you're a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Like, what are you doing? Why are you reading me this baby book? But it's definitely geared towards elementary. I think it goes up to like 6th grade. Kids, I mean, I have a bunch of books here in my room. I've had them in multiple offices, and I've used them in classrooms. But yeah, she does a really good job of, here's the book to read to kids. Now, this is how you ask the questions if you need help asking follow-up questions.
Love that. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Love that for us. Thank you so much, Michaela, for joining us today and sharing so much information. This was really fun and had a really lot of good knowledge in there. So thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Good. Well, I'm so glad. Maybe we'll have you back in the future.
Yes, I love talking about littles and preventative stuff. Like, that is my jam. I love it. I think that everybody, like, we're planting seeds. We're just planting seeds. And if they grow, they grow. But if they don't, that's okay too.
100%. Not everything grows when you put it in the ground. Especially those in Colorado, we know that. But when we do, it's good stuff.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Michaela.
Yeah, no problem.